Siyong Alkim's work blends several practices including painting, sculpture, writing, stop-motion animation, and performance. Her background as Gyopo, as part of the Korean diaspora, allows her to move freely across artistic disciplines to create new works that blend those disciplines and to break those boundaries. Her work is influenced by her childhood of many moves and displacements and the many stories she has gathered over the three continents she has called home at various times in her life. As a young Korean girl, growing up in Nairobi, Kenya, she listened to her parents tell her Korean folk tales, as well as stories about the struggles of the Korean people in their fight for independence from Japanese colonization in the Korean War, and in the struggle to build a country after the devastation of the Korean War that divided the country. She was shaped by the harsh beauty of the Kenyan landscape and the stories of the British colonization and the struggles of the Kenyan people for independence. All of these experiences and stories inform Kim's work that aims to transport us to a place of liberation where we are free from colonization and the burdens of racism, fear, and hate. In this conversation, Jay and Siyong discuss what it means for an artist to be present, moving back and forth between disciplines, and what happens when collaborators are invited into the creative process. This is Siyong's Lab.
Hello, my name is Soyoung L. Kim, and welcome to my lab. I was told when I was building it out that I had unlimited resources to invest, and I was allowed to defy the rules of space and time, so I'm excited to share it with you guys. First and foremost, to step into this lab, you need to be properly equipped with curiosity, honesty, and fearlessness. So, as you can see, my lab is a wide meadow lit up by the light of a full moon. The stage size fluctuates and can accommodate as many performers as we need, and performers can come and go freely. There's a gentle breeze here that cools us as we work, but it also carries the sounds of our making to reach others scattered throughout the universe. Many paths lead to this meadow, both over land and sea, through tunnels beneath the surface and channels through space. Here at my lab, I value openness, generosity, and resilience.
Thank you so much. Hello, Soyoung, how are you?
Good, thank you for having me.
Oh yes, very exciting. And I'm sure today's conversation is gonna be great. So first, tell us a little bit about yourself and your artistry and where you're based.
Yeah, so I am based in Brookline, and I'm primarily a visual artist and a writer. And but a little bit about myself, I was born in South Korea, but I grew up in Nairobi, Kenya, and so spent most of my childhood in Kenya. And then I made my way to the U.S. For college. And so that sort of feeds into a lot of my artistic practice, sort of the notions of dislocation, displacement, as well as sort of crossing borders and boundaries. Those are really important issues to me, both personally and sort of in my work as well. Yeah.
So what led you into artistry? Like, what was that initial bug that got you, and why are you still doing it all these years later?
Yeah, I think it was something that was always natural to me as a kid. You know, I would remember as a little girl just always drawing and spending time, creating things, right? And then when we made that move, I was 6 years old from Korea to Kenya, and my parents put me into the British school, and English was completely new to me. And I knew nothing except how to ask, you know, where's the bathroom? That was about the extent of my language, English language. And so
it's a good phrase to know.
Yeah. And so in the classrooms, I spent a lot of time sort of drawing because, you know, I'm sitting there absorbing, right, this new language and unable to speak or communicate. And through drawing, you know, I think other students as well as teachers were able to connect with me. And so that has always been a place of, I think, communication, right? When words fail, you can still communicate through the visual art. And so that's, I think, why it's always been sort of important to me. I also, though, grew up in a family, you know, a good Asian immigrant family that did not encourage us, you know, both myself or my brother to go into the arts. But I, you know, it's one of those things that I couldn't really stop. You know, it's so much a part of who I am and my existence and my identity. It's so I kept at it, you know.
That's amazing. So I mean, I'm hearing now that you're saying that it was really a tool for connection and communication, and maybe even in some ways a refuge in the midst of things you don't understand or things that are coming at you. Do you find that that's still true now when you engage in it, or has that transformed as you've transformed?
Yeah, I think it's definitely still a place of refuge to explore things and experiment. You know, a lot of times when I'm making my art, I have a sense of direction, but I may not know everything that is part of it. And so in the process of creating, I learn, okay, why is this important to me? What am I trying to say here? And so the journey and being in that place, I think, is definitely very much a part of the art as well as the finished product at the end.
I love that. So follow me down this rabbit hole, I guess, because this is a, I'm trying to form this question in a way that makes sense. So using art in that way, I'm wondering, was there ever a distinction for you where you felt like an artist or knew you were creative? The distinction being, I don't know, someone who regularly cooks food, but then one day says, no, I'm a chef, right? So does that distinction, did that ever happen for you? And what was that like?
Yeah, I think it's been sort of years in the making. I don't think I've had this one moment where I was like, oh yes, I have now made the transition from like a hobby artist to an official artist. I think it's been years in the making and sort of realizing, oh, I'm actually, you know, making, cobbling together a living through this, you know, and, oh, you know, my work is recognized in this way. And so I think it's been a gradual process. Does that answer the question?
It absolutely does. And so kind of related now. So what is creativity to you?
I think specifically to me, when I think of me being creative, I think is having the freedom to make whatever, even though it may not fall into some category. I think because, you know, as an artist and as a writer, there are certain categories that my work needs to fall into to, you know, sort of fit a market or channel, whatever. And so, and while, you know, there is creativity in that, I think when I feel truly creative is when I have this freedom to be like, okay, I can cobble together any and all of this and put something together to express something.
I love that so much because I find that, you know, artists that are either studying their art or making a career out of their art, I feel like they lose that sense of freedom. And, you know, like it makes it really difficult for them to reconnect with kind of the heart of the work. So I really love that. So I guess, what would you say to someone then who says that they're not creative? Do you feel like it's something you're born with, or is it something that you can develop through time?
I think, you know, when I look at people who are sort of excelling in whatever field that they are in, mm-hmm. I would say they are being creative. And I would say this of, you know, scientists, of business owners, you know, any, really any category, right? I feel like if you are really passionate about this something and you are giving it all and it's sort of growing, yeah. I think that is creativity, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so everyone has it. Everyone's born with it.
Everyone has it, yes. I think sometimes we may lose it mm-hmm. along the mm-hmm. way, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think everyone has it.
Yeah. So talking about losing it, or I guess having these blocks that come up, you know, I was going to ask, has that happened to you? I'm just going to assume that it has. And so the question there is, how do you work through those blocks? Is it a matter of walking away and coming back, or is there a process you found that helps you?
Yeah, I think for me, it happens frequently with writing or with even with visual art too. So what I end up doing, what I found works for me is, you know, if I'm writing something and I feel blocked and I cannot see a way forward with this piece of writing, I leave it and I go to make some visual art. And I think with writing, I'm so much in my head and you're looking at something so intently. But when you are creating visual art, at least for me, there's a lot of sort of physical movement that's involved. And I feel like that frees me up. And so I can come back to the writing and look at it afresh. But again, you know, like you were saying, it's about kind of leaving it and coming back to it and giving it some time. And that's also something too. Sometimes I need to digest something.
Right.
And same with paintings. You know, I've had paintings that I started and then they've sat in the studio for years.
Yeah.
And I come back to it years later and finish it.
Wow.
So I think it just sort of depends on the piece. Mm. Yeah.
That's amazing. So yes, you are a hyphenate, right? You work in kind of multiple mediums. And so I one, love to hear that switching between the two actually helps kind of like, they affect the two and your process during the two. And so I'm wondering, do you have a different creative process for each piece or, well, not piece, each medium, or do you feel like it's the same how you approach the work for visual arts and writing?
Yeah, I think for both, you know, you're starting with some kernel. So with visual art, it could be a color or some abstract landscape that I can see in my head, right? And then kind of building that up. And with writing, similar in that I usually am starting with a scene, you know, something's happening in this scene and I have to write about it. And then that can turn into a story sometimes, or it can remain as a poem, you know. But yeah, it usually starts out with this kind of this moment in my head.
That you then explore in either medium.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, when you're in the zone, right? Like when you're in that beautiful moment of just, some people call it flow or the hum, what do you call it? What does it look like? What does it feel like for you? And again, is there a difference between when you're in writing flow versus art flow? Because you said one is more heady and intellectual and one is more physical.
Yeah, I think the writing, it's hard to have a flow. I mean, there are definitely moments when you're like, oh my gosh, you know, I have to write this down, and you just kind of scribble it out. But then with writing, you have to always go back and you're rewriting, editing, and, you know, cutting, and just always, sometimes I wonder, does editing ever end? I'm not sure. With painting, I think it's easier for me to let go and be able to say it's done. You know, I've reached a point where this is done. So yeah,
you're making me feel a lot better. It does, and I'm like pretty early on in my writing journey, and I find that I'm mostly a performing artist. And so I think like you, I feel like I'm used to flow. I'm used to being able to get up there and be in the moment and feel the thing. And like you said, I feel like it's hard with writing because it's such like a start, stop, go back, go back, go back, go back, go back. And it's so hard for me to make peace with that. Like I'm still fighting it. And so it's just hard to like make peace with, Jay, it's not going to be good, or this is not going to be the final version. You will go back. And I'm just like, but why can't it be brilliant on the first try? So hearing all of this is like very reassuring that this is not just, this is part of the process.
Now, what are you writing?
You know, I've been getting into fiction writing. And so, and then I think also a lot of my writing is academic, right? And like administrative during the day too. So also bringing my mind up there is, it's not easy, but again, this is very, very encouraging to me. I appreciate
it. Yeah.
And so how does experimentation take place in your work? You know, we're talking a little bit about chasing the kernel of an idea and, you know, finding that flow to get in there. But what does that experimenting look like, and where in the process does that happen? Is that the initial thing of just, I want, the idea is to experiment, or is it midway through the process that you go, let me bring a new element in here? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, let's see. I guess I can talk about in the context of, you know, like poetry. You know, I never considered myself a poet, but then I've been writing a bunch of things lately that's, you know, my friends are like, well, that's a poem.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay, I'm a poet.
Love it.
And so that was happening sort of before my grant project, because my grant project is now spoken word, right? But yeah, in that I was sort of playing around with, oh, well, how can I present this this poem sort of in a virtual setting? And so then I started experimenting and playing around with like stop motion animation and sort of creating what I have now come to realize there is a category, this visual poetry. And so so I think a lot of times for me, experimenting comes from sort of playing around in the studio, perhaps thinking about, well, how do I present this in this platform that I may not be too familiar with, or it's a new platform. So sort of taking that risk of, I've never done this before, but I'm going to try it and let's see what comes out of it, right? I think so. That's what experimenting to me looks like. And so with my project for this grant, it's sort of like, okay, performance art, I haven't really created this before, but hey, let's try it. You know, I can bring in the writing, I can bring in the visual art. Let's see what else I can bring in.
Yeah. I love that. And we'll get into the lab for all the people listening. We'll get into what that product actually is. But, you know, you're talking about experimenting and taking these risks. And I don't want to make it sound like it's easy for you, but I feel like a lot of people don't take that leap. And so I'm wondering what in your life, what in your work has given you, you know, the courage to be able to experiment in this way. And it seems like it's a consistent process for you. So where does that come from?
I think I think that's always been a like a part of me, you know, sort of, yeah, there are always sort of these pressures to create things that will sell, you know. Sure. I mean, we all as artists struggle with that and have to deal with that, right? So there is that. But I think to me, it's always been important to sort of leave the space and to sort of protect that space of having time and space to like fail, you know, because obviously if I'm doing something for the first time, I'm not going to get it perfect, right? And it might look trashy, but that's okay, you know, because I think when you're kind of playing around, that you have a moment at some point where it's, oh, actually, that's not too bad, right? And so, yeah, I think it's always been important to me. Perhaps it's because, you know, I grew up knowing that, okay, you know, my parents don't want me to pursue this, but it's important to me and I need it. And so I need to make space for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that so much.
Today's Creative Catalyst is inspired by Franz Kafka, who once said, "It isn't just necessary that you leave home. Sit at your desk and listen. Don't even listen. Just wait. Don't wait. Be still and alone. The whole world will offer itself to you. There is power in stillness." And oftentimes as artists, it's so hard to turn our brains off and just be present in the moment and, well, be still. So for today, let's try it. Find someplace, any place, and set a timer for 5 minutes and notice what you hear. Close your eyes if it helps. Take another 5 minutes and write down all the sounds you heard. Lastly, set your timer one more time, but this time for 10 minutes, and make art derived from the sounds. Maybe it's a poem, or a sound map, or even an exploration of what those sounds look like in your body. Whatever it is, friend, just sit, listen, and create.
So before I ask my next question, let us, yes, talk about your lab project. Can you describe it for folks?
Yeah. So this project was inspired by, it's a Korean, it's like a 5,000-year-old Korean tradition. It's called Kangang Sule. And it's a circle dance for specifically for women. And this is not like a choreographed for stage dance. It's a community event that women would come out at Chuseok, which is their annual harvest celebration. And so if it's a full moon, they come out at night. And this is like the one time in the year the women could come out at night on their own, because this was taking place in a sort of a male-dominated hierarchical society where women couldn't move freely on their own. But this was the one night. One night they could come out. And so all the women of the village would come together and, you know, they would play games and they would eat and sing. And then they would have this dance. And usually it's someone who is singing and the women will kind of move in a circle and they will go through different sort of phases. They would sing about sort of the griefs that they've experienced, you know. They would sing about their loves, relationships, as well as quarrels amongst each other. And these were all things that they would sing about and dance to. And so to me, you know, this was something at the beginning of the pandemic that really felt meaningful. And as you know, there was a lot of Asian American hate and all of the violent acts that were happening, and then just all the racial awareness that was sort of coming to the surface in our country. I felt like I needed to tap into this Kangang Sule as a sort of form of healing and kind of coming together. And so my project is a reinterpretation of this old traditional form. So I'm not recreating it. I'm not like trying to keep the form intact. I'm using it sort of more as an inspiration point and creating something new and setting it here in America. And sort of telling a different story.
That sounds so powerful. And there's a collaborative aspect of it too, right?
Correct. So I'm collaborating with Fernandina Chan, who is a choreographer, and you know, she's you know, she's well advanced in her years. She's retired. She's been teaching for decades. But she still continues to choreograph. But I asked her to come on this with me and asked her to perform with me and sort of, you know, so that we can perform this thing about supporting each other and lifting one another up and sort of looking at her representing the older generation. And so she and I have been working on spoken word, which will be kind of like the soundtrack that we, she and I will move to. And then I'm also creating visual art that's going to be projected on the backdrop. Wow. So yeah, there are a lot of elements. I've also invited Toyon Kim. She's another lab grantee this year. Yeah. And she plays the kayagum, which is a Korean traditional instrument. And I asked her to compose something for us. So she, her piece will also be in our performance as well. Yeah. I love this.
So have you done deep, first off, this project sounds amazing. And I'm just thinking of the space that's created with a moment like that, the original piece that you're talking about, well, the original practice that you're talking about, I just think of how powerful that space must be. And for you to reimagine and re-inspire that now in this moment, it feels right. And so just kudos to you for that, first and foremost.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. And so now, I'm wondering, have you collaborated in this way before across disciplines? And what has that been like? And if not, what has that been like?
Yeah, so Fernandina and I have collaborated before. So this was back in 2017, and she asked me to create art for her dancers through Continuum Dance Project. And so we were actually in the Boston Center for the Arts. We had a very specific space. And so I created art specific for that space that we were inhabiting. And so in that collaboration, you know, it was very much a traditional dance performance with elements of my art in it. And, you know, I created pieces that the dancers could sort of interact with in their performance. But, you know, this time I wanted to go, I guess, a bit further. And also, you know, I think for me, it felt necessary for me physically to be involved in this because, you know, as an artist, yeah, I can create art pieces to reflect, you know, sort of the weight of our time. But no, I think I feel like I need to respond sort of physically, bodily, you know. And so it was important for me to be in it myself and then to bring in Fernandina and, you know, sort of wanting her to be her her senior self, you know. And so I think with this project, rather than the art being sort of this element,
yeah,
I wanted this piece to be sort of the performance, the spoken word, the visual, to all sort of kind of come together, kind of get tangled up, I guess.
So how does the collaboration affect your creative process? Typically also because the work you do is so singular, right? And so now just inviting other people in addition to inviting people from other disciplines in, how is that affecting how you normally work and develop?
I find that I am doing a lot more, you know, administrative stuff, you know, checking in on people, getting them to hand me stuff, you know. But like with the spoken word, we started with the spoken word part, you know. So Fern and I wrote our pieces, and I worked for quite a while trying to, because I wanted to retain each of our individual voices, right? And so trying to kind of bring that all together into a cohesive script and eventually soundtrack. And so that took, that wasn't easy, but you know, it's something we've been working on. And then even with the choreography, you know, we would go into the studio together, and even though I am not a professional dancer, you know, Fern and I improvised at the beginning, and, you know, so that we could understand each other's movements better. And so in some ways, we are both bringing in sort of movements into the choreography. And, you know, Fern being the seasoned choreographer is kind of helping smooth things out, right?
I love that idea of using play or discovery to kind of learn the vocabulary of the collaborator. I don't know if that's something I've heard yet in these kind of conversations about how to engage in that work, because like then I think it allows you to authentically make sure that every voice is represented and feels, you know, less like I'm handing you something and you're handing me something and we're just putting it together and that's the collaboration, right? This feels a lot more integrated. I think it's really beautiful.
Thank you. I think the cost of that though is the time. We had to put in the time to sort of, you know, work on each of our own parts and then bring it together and sort of work together to find a place where things come together.
Time is always the tough one, time and money.
That's right.
So I'm wondering, as you mentioned, there were so many factors that inspired this, right? We're in a time of a global pandemic that's unending, this time of violence, as you mentioned, against members of the Asian diaspora, a time of reckoning as it relates to this kind of racial movement. And so I'm wondering, how did that all affect you in terms of just like resilience and making this work? And have you learned any lessons about yourself or about this time that's informed your process or this piece?
Yeah, I think, you know, for sure it's sort of pushed me to tap into sort of my understanding of my own personal history, so where I come from, my roots, and I think, but at the same time, you know, while I'm kind of reaching into the past, there is this need to reach into the future and kind of think about, well, how do we move forward? Because you know, we must find a way forward. We must find a way to sort of care for one another. But I think, so first and foremost is that sort of this reaching into the past, my roots, and thinking about the future, but then also this me having to or feeling this need to respond bodily, you know. I think I've seen in the visual art world a lot of people turning to sort of figurative work, right? Because again, there is this need. Oh my gosh, there is all this a crisis and violence towards Black and brown and Asian bodies, you know. And so there's, I felt like I've seen a lot of artists responding by moving towards figurative art. And for me, that didn't feel like the right road to go down. Instead, it seems I need to respond bodily by performing this piece. Yes. Yeah.
So that, I have a question on that now. So I've been having conversations with a lot of creatives about, and this has kind of come up for me even in my writing as well, this feeling of the things that we need to channel into the work and our body being the instrument of that channel. But are we effective? Do we know how? Have we learned to then release it from our bodies? Right. And so you're talking about these big things and saying that you want to show up very physically and present. And I'm wondering, is that release something that you've thought about? And has this come up before? And how do you navigate that piece?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I've ever thought about releasing. I mean, I haven't performed much as an adult, you know, on stage. It's something I did more as a kid. And I don't know. I mean, as a performance artist, you might have more insight into this, but once you've performed something on stage, there is an element of releasing, and it's done, it's over. And then, you know, you don't really take it on again until the next time you're stepping out on the stage, right? And you're kind of grabbing a hold of that again. So perhaps that's what I am looking into with this project is, you know, I want to release it. I want to be able to release it.
That's the whole point, right?
Yes.
I love that, that purge. And so I guess, what are you, in terms of audience now, what are you looking from for your audience? And is there a particular audience that this work is for?
Yeah, I think, you know, in speaking to a lot of Asian Americans, this, I think, is, I'm hoping, is something that they will resonate with for sure. But I think for anybody who, I think especially women, you know, will hopefully resonate with it as well. But just the you know, both Fern and my stories are very much steeped in the immigrant story and some of the pain that comes with that, as well as the joys of that. And so hopefully that's something people will relate to. Yeah.
I love that. Well, that's it. In terms of the questions, is there a place where people can find you and follow your work?
Yeah, so I have a website. It's very simple, soyoungelkim.com, and on Instagram and Twitter as well, at soyoungelkim. That's where they can find me, yeah.
Wonderful. This was an amazing conversation, and I think the perfect start to season two. Thank you for inviting us into your lab, inviting us into your process, and into your work.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been such a pleasure.
Absolutely. All right, we'll talk soon.
Take care.
Dexter's Lab is made possible by a partnership between the Boston Foundation and Dunamis. To learn more about the Boston Foundation, visit www.tbf.org. Follow on Instagram at BostonFDN and on Facebook, The Boston Foundation. You can also follow Dunamis on all platforms at Dunamis Boston. That's Dunamis Boston. Or visit us at dunamisboston.org. Until next time, and thanks for listening. Stay creative.